Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. Text 37. Tatra yadyapi upadir anavidyakatvena vastavatvam tarya vishayasya tasya paricheda vishayasambhavaha nirdharmakasya vyapakasya niravayasya cha pratibimbatva yogopi upadi sambandha bhavad bimba pratibimba beda bhavad drishyatva bhavad cha upadi parichinakashasta jyotir amshasyaiva pratibimbo drishyate not tva kashasya drishyatva bhavad eva. Considering the matter more deeply, suppose these upadis were not products of illusion and thus were substantially real. Oh boy, we've been talking about upadis. Have we discussed what an upadi is? Uh-oh. Okay, I have to make a question now. Have we discussed it at all up to now? Okay, at least I said that. Suppose these upadis were not products of illusion and thus were substantially real. They could not possibly subject Brahman to division. So let's suppose that, you know, something superimposed on Brahman by avidya, duality, let's say, the duality imposed on Brahman, suppose it is real, it's not imaginary, it's not illusion. Okay, they were not products of illusion and thus were substantially real. They could not possibly subject Brahman to division, since Brahman never undergoes change. Brahman also cannot be subject to reflection, since what is devoid of qualities extends everywhere and has no parts, cannot have any relation with upadis, be distinguished into original object and reflection, or even be visible. A reflection of the sky can never be seen, but only a reflection of a certain quantity of light in a portion of the sky. A portion defined by some upadi, some imaginary feature. After all, the sky itself is invisible. The sky, akasha. According to Vaisheshika philosophy, akasha is infinite. It's an object that doesn't have a finite size. Infinite objects, according to Vaisheshika philosophy, can't be divided. Only things of medium size can be divided. Atoms cannot be divided. That's what the word atoma means in Greek, undividable. And the Vaisheshika philosophy, which is pretty much agreed to by all the schools of traditional Indian philosophy, that infinitely small things and infinitely big things cannot be divided, cannot have parts. Only things of medium size. That means something that's finite in size, but not infinitesimal. Only those things can be divided and have parts. Akasha doesn't have parts, but it seems to have parts. We talk about different parts of the sky. It's really something's on top of the sky. There's the part of the sky that's delimited by a certain constellation. But it's really the imposition of the stars on top of the sky that's creating an upadi, an apparent division where there isn't any. But the sky itself can't be reflected. It's too big to fit in any mirror. It has no qualities, no visible qualities, akasha. So what's going to show up in the mirror? Nothing. And also it's not visible at all. So you can't, even if you look at the akasha directly with your own eyes, you can't see it. If you reflect it in a mirror, what do you expect to see? If you reflect something that's invisible in the mirror, what are you going to see? Anyway, that's the Anucheda. Now let's see what the commentary says. Mayavadis propose that the world as we know it originates from an apparent relationship between the one reality and the power of illusion. In this view, God and the jivas are imaginary features, upadis, superimposed onto Brahman by ajnana. Ajnana, did I already discuss this? Ajnana is the original power of illusion. Avidya is an expansion of it. Ajnana, illusion, divides into avidya and vidya, ignorance and knowledge, those two potencies. Ajnana is the original maya. It's just a choice of technical terms. It's not the basic meaning of ajnana and avidya. Basically, the meanings are almost the same. But we're distinguishing, for technical purposes, between the original deluding power and the expanded functions of that power. Because maya both gives ignorance but also knowledge. It binds and it also liberates. So ajnana is the original maya. Yes?
Ajnana is the same term as maya?
Yeah, ajnana is the original form of maya. Okay. Here Jiva Goswami begins to submit this theory to analysis. Analysis for the purpose of destroying it. Okay. First, applying simple logic, he says the upadis created by ajnana in relation with Brahman must be either real or unreal. So it's putting aside the question of whether the ajnana, maya, is real or not. At least let's talk about, because that's a Mayavadi just claim you can't say whether it's real or not real. Maya. Okay, what about the products of maya? The imaginary, what do we call this? Imaginary features. That's the translation I came up with of the word upadi. We have to properly explain what an upadi is. That we'll do eventually. But at least we have a term we can use in English. And I think imaginary features is workable. So these upadis are created by illusion. And of course, it's created, it's something that illusion does to Brahman, because Brahman is all that is real anyway. So the upadis must be created from Brahman. So they're created from Brahman by ajnana. Well, okay, what about these upadis? Do they really exist or do they not exist? Are they real or unreal? Yes, sir.
I think one of the propositions of the arguments of Mayavadis is that this maya is not real and not unreal at the same time, and they try to use this philosophy of achintya. They tell that achintya means it's neither real nor unreal.
Yes.
So in this connection, Shishunji Goswami, he tries to split it into two parts, like if it's real, it's so, if it's unreal, it's so.
Yeah.
But how to reconcile to their opposition that it's not neither real
nor
unreal?
No, see, but
is it going on further?
But they are, Krishna, That's why he's not asking whether Ajnana is real or unreal, because Mayavadis, they'll just say it's, you know, you're not supposed to ask that question, or it's neither or both, or. But he's not addressing that. He's putting that aside, and let's say, well, what about the upadis that are created by Maya? Are they real or unreal? Okay? All right. So the upadis must be either real or unreal. I mean, okay, if you're going to tell us, well, they can't be real. I mean, they are not nirvachaniya. Well, then what? Then nothing's. Then you've come to the point that everything is undescribable. Then we have no further discussion. We might as well just take a vow of silence because we can't discuss anything. But we're going to ask, are these upadis real or not real? Although an upadi is a quality or thing in an imagined relationship with something else, the upadi itself may be real. Okay, I discussed this elsewhere. It may be in the Bhagavad Sandarbha. Maybe I left this the more detailed explanation of what an upadi is for the second Sandarbha. But briefly, what's going on here is that there are two kinds of upadis. One is that the upadi is actually not real. It's something that doesn't even exist. And the Mayavadis would say that jivas and God don't really exist, that there are upadis that don't exist. But there are other upadis that exist, but you're falsely applying it to something it doesn't belong to. Like the color real red, okay, I'll give the example now. The upadi itself may be real. The redness of a flower, for example, is real. But the redness of a clear stone in front of it is not. You take a transparent stone and put it in front of a red flower, the stone seems to be red. The red color is real, but it doesn't belong to the stone. That's the upadi. That's the second kind of upadi. A non-existent quality, or a quality that's identified with the wrong thing. Those are the two different kinds of upadis. So next, Sri Jiva Goswami examines one after another the consequences that ensue if the upadis of Brahman are real and if, on the contrary, they are unreal. Try both ways. See what that logically means. If the upadis created by Ajnana were to involve real, substantial changes and were not a kind of illusion created by wrongly perceiving a rope to be a snake, certain difficulties would arise. Because Brahman, the absolute truth, as defined by the Mayavadis, is assumed to be perfect, Brahman's perfection and exclusive existence as one without a second implies that it never becomes the object, Vishaya, of any kind of action by another agent. Shruti seems to affirm this. Agrihyo nahi grihyate. The untouchable can never be taken hold of. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Brahman cannot factually be split into God and the jivas like a stone chiseled into pieces. Such a naive conception of division, paricheda, would contradict Brahman's indivisibility and uniformity and would assign a beginning to the eternal Ishvara and the eternal jiva. Okay. One might suggest that Brahman as a whole remains undivided, while some portions of it, affected by Ajnana, I don't know how it can have portions if it's undivided, but anyway, while some portions of it, affected by Ajnana, become Ishvara and the jivas. But such a refinement is not adequate. In such a case, the portions of Brahman covered by the upadis would have to shift their location in Brahman whenever the apparent realities moved. And parts of Brahman would thus be covered one moment and uncovered the next. This would subject Brahman to constant change. Nor is the absurdity removed by hypothesizing that all of Brahman is covered by the upadis, because that would leave no Brahman uncovered by illusion. And if God and the jivas were nothing more than the apparent qualifications of Brahman created by itself and superimposed on itself, then as soon as any jiva became liberated, none of the other jivas, not even God, would continue to exist. When we assume that the upadis are real, the theory that Brahman's reflection, pratibimba, in a jnana produces God and the jivas also runs into serious problems. Because Brahman is supposed to have no specific qualities, it cannot have the specific quality of possessing upadis. Because it is infinite and present everywhere, it cannot be confined to the dimensions of any reflected form. And because it has no parts, there is no means by which it can be perceived. To see an object means to discern the configuration of its measurable parts. And therefore, partless infinite entities like the sky, time, and the cardinal directions are invisible. A real reflection involves objects that have specific qualities, are limited in size, and have component parts that form perceivable configurations. A pratibimbavadi might try to defend his theory by pointing to the infinite sky, akasha. I missed a sentence. Okay. Such objects, like the sun, can have a real relation with a reflecting surface like water. Brahman, however, is disqualified from this kind of relationship. A pratibimbavadi may try to defend his theory by pointing to the infinite sky, akasha, which does sometimes appear in reflections. But what is actually reflected in such cases is but a finite portion of the sky, delimited by finite objects present within it, like stars, planets, or the sun. Otherwise, time, the sky, and the directions should also show themselves in reflections. Some Mayavadis propose that the reflection of Brahman in Ajnana is more like an auditory reflection than a visual one, like an echo reflecting some original sound. An echo, however, is clearly separate and different from the original sound. An Advaitavad assumes that in reality, no second entity can exist separate from Brahman. The metaphor of reflection fails as badly as that of division in explaining the undeniable duality of this world. Okay, we're at the end of the commentary. Any discussion? Yeah.
Altanupadi is a quality or thing in an imagined relationship with something else. Dupadi itself may be real.
Yes.
I just don't understand the sentence. Like, altanupadi is a quality of something imagined. Dupadi itself may be real.
Well, see, what's imagined? First of all, what's imagined? The thing that can't be real is the relationship of the quality with what you think has the quality. The quality itself may be real or not.
Okay.
But the relationship of the quality with what you think has it is unreal. Okay. That makes it an upadi. That's why you have two different kinds of upadis. Real upadis and unreal upadis.
Okay.
I can think that the stone is red, although it's actually transparent and there's a red flower behind it. Or I can think that the stone is a square triangle. If I think it's a square triangle, then there's no such thing. I'm talking nonsense. That's an unreal upadi. Yes.
Thank you.
How do the Vaisheshikas say that the akasha is unlimited, as we see that it's encapsulated by the universal egg? So, I mean, maybe big, but it doesn't seem to be unlimited.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm just wondering how the Vaisheshikas, how they say that the akasha is unlimited because it's encapsulated by the universal egg, so it's big, but it's not unlimited.
Yeah, so I don't think we'll agree with their idea that akasha is really infinite. This is a Vaisheshika idea. Mm. Okay, why are the Vedantists accepting that idea? Okay, I don't know. Can I make a note about this? Do we as Vedantists agree that the Akasha is infinite? It looks like we do, because Jiva Goswami is accepting that as a fact. But I can check that. Why do we also agree? Just because of Vaisheshika say it, why do we have to accept it, that Akasha is infinite? Of course, we have the Akasha that's contained, you have the sky that's contained in a cup. That's not all the Akasha, it's just some of it. So you have the Akasha that's contained in the shell of the universe. There can be more Akasha outside it. I don't know. I know the Mahat Tattva, which is more subtle than Akasha, right? Yeah. Pervades all the universes. There's only one Mahat Tattva. The other elements exist, separate set of elements in each universe, but Mahat Tattva is the primeval soup in which all the universes are lying. But it doesn't say that Akasha pervades all the universes. Each universe has its own Akasha. So I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. Yes?
In the translation, you say that the sky itself is invisible. And also the sky, you cannot divide the sky.
Well, Jiva Goswami said that. Drishya Tva Bhavad.
And the sky is invisible, indivisible. But I don't know if we say unlimited. Do we actually say unlimited somewhere?
Well, let me see.
Because that's the idea we're playing with, that the sky cannot be divided. We cannot
measure
the sky.
Where do I say it can't be divided? Let's get this. Where does it say it cannot be divided?
Well, it says at the after all, the sky itself is invisible. That's the last sentence of the of the translation. So I think we're seeing the sky, we're looking at the feature of the sky as being that we cannot measure the sky. Like a quantity of sky, you cannot measure. It's undivisible.
Undivisible. I use the word undivisible?
I don't know.
Help me find it. Where's the statement? In the commentary?
No, in the translation.
What does it say?
It says, after all, the sky itself is invisible.
Okay, where do I say about being undividable?
Oh, I mean, just that's the idea.
I'm sorry. I must be saying this in the commentary, right? Help me find it.
Okay, there it is. Pratibhimbavadi may try to defend his theory.
May try to defend. Let me find it. Okay. Infinite sky. Okay, now I call it infinite. Infinite and finite portion. Okay. Now your questioning is, why do we really agree that the sky is infinite? Now, it doesn't say, are we right that it doesn't say in the commentary infinite? Right? I mean, I'm sorry, in the translation, there's nothing in the verse, in the translation itself, about being infinite.
In Prabhupada's Gita, he may have used that same phrase, infinite sky. Maybe it's just
yes.
So close.
But that may just be, relatively infinite. I have to, hold on a second. I'll be with you in a second. I'm writing a comment to myself here because this is a real question. Is the sky infinite? Where is this said? Okay, I'm asking that. I can't say for sure, but I'm asking myself that question and I'll check it. One second. Okay.
I think it's like kind of analogy, because from our perspective, sky is practically infinite, because this universe is so great for us, sky is really infinite.
But if the sky, if that's the actual case, the sky is only seems to be infinite. We call it infinite. It's not really infinite. Then my argument here is wrong. Then I'm talking about it being actually infinite and can't be divided. If sky is too big for us to measure, still it can be divided, it's just we can't see. We can't see it, that's all.
Maybe.
Before we get into that further, I think what I'm saying here is simply paraphrasing what Baladeva Jibhushan said, before we tear it apart too much. I don't think it's my idea, it's Baladeva Jibhushan's idea. So I have to go back and look what he said and then try to trace it back to where he got it from. But go ahead.
Because it's one kind of analogy, and each analogy is limited by their application. So we can practically, in practical life, the sky is infinite, but we can see that actually it's not infinite. Because
okay, but if it's not actually infinite, then why can't it have a reflection if it's finite? If the sky is finite, then we can have some sort of, get something bigger than the sky and it can reflect it. Yeah, possible. Get a big enough mirror and you can reflect the sky if it's not infinite. But we're arguing that it can't have a reflection because it's infinite. Anyway, Brahman is infinite, even if the sky isn't. But we have to make our example consistent. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, Damodar, and then Nityananda, and then
just like time. Time is infinite, but we can measure it.
We're not measuring time. We're measuring how much time it takes for the glass to get from one side of the glass of the thing to another.
Exactly. So
we're measuring. In order to measure time, we have to measure other things.
Yeah.
Because you can't directly measure time.
So isn't that the same thing with the sky? Is that we say the sky contained in the universe? Actually, what we're measuring is the universe.
Right. But
the
sky
But this element sky itself cannot be confined. You can say, okay,
but that means you can't have a reflection of the whole sky. You can only have a reflection of what, of just some, of an apparent division of the sky.
Yeah.
Because an infinite thing, if it is infinite, it can't be divided. Yeah. You can't have both. Either it's finite or infinite. And if it's infinite, it can't be divided. Yeah. And so you can't have even a reflection of part of the sky because you can't have a part of an infinite thing. Okay. It has to be finite in order to have parts. We do agree with that. You know, it's not just Vaisheshika philosophy. We also say the infinite things can't be divided. So it's only apparent division. We cannot actually have an actual reflection of Brahman. We can only have an imagined one. So we're running into problems if we say that the upadis that divide up Brahman or reflect it, that they're real. If they're real, there's no way they can affect Brahman. You can't have such upadis on Brahman because Brahman cannot actually be divided or reflected. Not all of Brahman.
When we speak about the sky and the universe, what we measure is the universe.
So what you're measuring is the upadis. But what about how did the upadis come from Brahman? You know, okay, the upadis are measurable. The upadis have reflections. The upadis can be divided up. But what about Brahman, which is the actual reality? That can't be divided, not in any real way. Can't be reflected. Can't have a real reflection. Not the whole thing. You can only reflect your dualities.
But speaking about the sky that was unlimited, the sky itself cannot be measured. What we measure is the size of the universe.
We're not talking about measuring the whole size of the universe either. We're just talking about,
we're speaking about
stars, planets, or the sun.
Yeah, we're speaking about infinite sky.
And we're talking about you can measure finite things that are, you know, imposed on the sky.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is that the sky is unlimited, but it's what we're speaking about is the measure of the universe, not of the sky itself.
Okay.
Does it make sense?
The universe of the sky. So, but okay, but how can Brahman be reflected? How can Brahman create duality? How can duality be created out of Brahman by a process either of reflection or division? You cannot apply. You can't subject Brahman to either of those, to division or reflection. Not real division, not real reflection. Because Brahman is infinite, it can't be cut into pieces. And because Brahman is infinite, it can't be reflected. You can't have a reflected image of an infinite thing. There isn't a big enough mirror to show an infinite thing. Therefore, this is the problem, that we can't explain the existence of duality coming from Brahman by any real process of division or reflection. Maybe it can be imaginary reflection or division, but you can't really divide or reflect the whole Brahman. And the sky is just an analogy, but the real problem is with Brahman. Okay, if sky is infinite, if it's infinite, then you can't reflect it and you can't divide it. If it's not infinite, then the example doesn't really, you know, it's not really perfect. But if it's infinite, as long as it is infinite, then it has the same problem that Brahman has. It can't be divided, can't be reflected. You can only have an imaginary division or reflection.
So that's what I was discussing, is the example.
Okay, well, that I can't.
Yeah. The sky being unlimited, I'm giving some
Purva-paksha. But I'm saying if it is infinite, then you can't divide, you can't reflect
it. Yes, exactly.
If it's not infinite, let's see. Mm. I think it's infinite, and I think Baladevi Dhrushan is telling us it's infinite. So why argue about it not being infinite if we're agreeing it's infinite?
Well, because what he was saying is that.
Yeah, what I said. Let me check and see about that, about sky not being infinite.
Okay.
I don't think that's our position.
Yeah, but he was
that sky's not infinite. I think it's given as the example because it's infinite. If it's not infinite, then it's not an applicable example.
And isn't it contained within the universe?
But let's not further argue about that because I want to go back and see what Baladevi Dhrushan said about it.
Okay, because I was offering some
counter arguments. No, as far as whether the sky is not infinite. Hold off on that. I have to do a little research to answer that. Okay. Nityananda Prabhu.
Changing the subject. On the paragraph of a commentary, 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph, one might suggest that Brahman as a whole remains undivided.
Yes, I have the paragraph.
While some portions of it affected by Agyana become Ishwaranjit, but such a refinement is not adequate. Refinement, you mean the refinement of the philosophy, like of the idea.
Yeah, refinement of the theory.
Yeah, and then further on, it's not so clear for me. In such a case, the portions of Brahman covered by the Upadhis would have to shift their location in Brahman whenever the apparent reality is moved. So what we are talking about, what are the apparent realities and shifting of the location? What's this?
Okay, hold on a second. I'm making a note about your first question. Well, okay. I'm not sure. This definitely is from Baladev about the Upadhis moving around. Well, okay, we're proposing that instead of the Agyana affecting all of Brahman, it just affects certain parts of Brahman. Maybe this is a spurious argument, I don't know. Suppose one of the, you know, you as an individual jiva, you're one of those pure parts of Brahman. And Agyana just, you know, picked on you, not on the rest of Brahman, and made you what you are. The argument is, if you walk around, then the Maya is walking around inside Brahman. It's affecting different parts of Brahman. Why it is that you're walking around means that you become different parts of Brahman. You're not the same. You're somewhere. You know, you're this part of Brahman, and if you walk over there, then you're that part of Brahman. Why is it like that? Aren't you the same, whatever you are, aren't you the same thing no matter where you go? So I don't know what's the actual validity of this argument.
But what do you mean by the... I just wanted to...
I didn't say it, but David Dibushan said it.
Apparent realities. Yeah, apparent realities.
No, apparent realities.
Yeah, what...
That's like you. You're a jiva, so you're not real. You're only apparently real.
Okay, so this apparent reality.
And you're apparently asking me this question.
Okay, now I understand what's. Yeah, because it's not when you read, it's not so clear what this reality is.
Which are the apparent realities?
We are talking about, yeah.
Okay, where is the words?
Now, when you clarify this clear, it's a fourth sentence, fourth line.
Oh.
Can when
how
you?
How about if I say those instead of the? Because those are the portions of Brahman. Hold on a second. One thing at a time.
Because when you clarify it now, it's clear. But okay, when I read it, it's not clear.
It will be clarified if I say the word those
instead of
the, because that means the same ones. It's not that the portions of Brahman are one thing, and the apparent realities are another thing. They're the same thing. So I think that's solved by using the word those instead of the.
Yeah.
Okay, then what was the next comment? I think Vishnukanta had first his hand.
And then you finish the sentence by saying, in parts of Brahman would thus be covered one moment and uncovered the next. So what I understand from this is that you're speaking about the liberation of some jivas and the conditioning of some jivas. Is that you have the whole Brahman, it's covered some parts, then the covered parts, they attain liberation, and then they become uncovered by Brahman?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's what it means.
Well, how you said parts of Brahman would thus be
covered. Well, it sounds like if a part moves, then it becomes a different part. It's funny. It's like waves in the water. Okay, when the wave moves through the water, it's different parts of the water that are involved as it moves. But it's the same wave. This is like a wave theory of jivas. The jivas are just waves. And as they move, they're manifesting in different parts of Brahman. But I don't know why it is like that. You know, why say that when a jiva moves, or any other, it's not just jivas, any duality, when it moves, then it becomes it's a different part of Brahman. I don't understand why. Okay?
Let me mark what you just asked with a question mark, and leave it at that. Because this has to be further considered. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I can't give you a good answer. I just have to leave it with a question mark.
Because you say parts are covered and some are uncovered, and it seems that the covering moves around.
Yeah, but it's more like, rather than Maya, you know, jumping from one jiva to another, gets you, you know, tag, you're it, and then 5 minutes later, no, next it's you. It's not switching from one jiva to another. It's one jiva, one upadi moving around. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when you get up from here and go to your room, then it's a different part of Brahman being affected when you're in your room and then when you're sitting here. I don't understand why that is so. I can't understand that. It looks like you know, whatever. If you're part of Brahman, then you'd be the same part of Brahman no matter where you go. But this is said by Baladeva Vidyabhushan. I have to try to figure it out. Yes.
I had an elementary question in to understand the constitution position of Ajnana. You said
you're not supposed to ask about that. It's a nivrachaniya. Go ahead.
But I'm not able to understand how, if Brahman is a Brahma, I think Brahman is a living force. Is it true? Is it living or dead?
What do you mean by living? If living
is it's conscious.
If a living thing is something that also dies, no.
It's conscious, sir.
It's conscious, yeah, because that's affirmed by the conscious.
Yeah, so it's a living thing.
You know, it doesn't. How would you say living in Sanskrit? Jivan? You know, it doesn't say that Brahman is jivan. It says it's satyam gyanam anantam. So it is gyanam, it's conscious.
Okay.
Or it's consciousness. But elsewhere it says, you know, sarva gya, sarva, you know, it knows everything, yes.
Yeah, I'm saying living in terms of conscious, being conscious.
Yeah, I think the Mayavadis will agree with you. I'm not a Mayavadi myself, but I think they'll agree with you. No, that Brahman is conscious.
No, Brahman.
No, are you talking about Brahman or Jnana?
Brahman.
Brahman is conscious, okay. Sure. But I don't think your Mayavadis will disagree with that.
But next question is, so if Ajnana is going to cover Brahman, that means Ajnana should also be conscious.
Well, I don't know. If I if I throw a blanket over you, does the blanket have to be alive?
But somebody is throwing that blanket, so that somebody else is a different person than the person who's being covered.
No, suppose there's a blanket on the roof, and the wind blows it off, and it lands on you. Nobody did it.
But somebody would have put the blanket on the roof such that the wind blows and put on. No, I'm trying to understand this Ajnana force.
Okay, what if you just put the blanket on yourself? Okay, I take my charger and put it on me. A living being did it. I did it to myself. The blanket is not alive.
I'm not pure conscious. I'm a stupid then.
No, Brahman, why can't Brahman just throw things on top of himself? That was one suggestion. If Brahman is creating his own
that
illusion.
That means Brahman is stupid.
Maybe he's cold. He's putting a blanket on himself.
But if he's pure... if he's a pure conscious entity and full of jnana, manantam, ananda...
And he's also unchanging.
Yeah, unchanging and indivisible and all that. Then why should he put a blanket on himself?
If you're unchanging, you're not allowed to wear a chadar. Yeah, you can't do anything.
No, this they speak so much about ajnana and ajnana, then vidya, vidya and all that. But ajnana itself... Is it an instrument in the hands of Brahman itself or another?
To be an instrument, it has to be real. You know, I can't have a hammer made out of rabbit's horn and be able to actually hammer nails with it. If I have a non-existent hammer, it's not much of a tool. It's not a tool. I may be hallucinating and think I have an imaginary hammer that I can hit everybody in the head with, but... If it's not real, I can't actually use it like that. It's not a tool. It's just an hallucination. So to be a tool in the hands of Brahman, because then you're giving Brahman hands, but if it was a tool being used by Brahman, then it would have to be real to be a tool.
So if it's a tool in the hands of Brahman,
then it's real.
How can the tool be more powerful than the Brahman itself? How can the... person who's created by me.
Okay. I can take the hammer and hit myself on the head with it.
No, but that doesn't make the hammer
stronger than me. It makes me stupid. But
that's contradicting the definition of Brahman, which is a pure conscious entity and jnana, manantam, and
right.
All that.
You know, this is a basic argument. It's given by the Vaishnava Acharyas. And I think Jiva Goswami has already mentioned it. You know, how can Brahman be affected by illusion at all? Then illusion would be more powerful than Brahman. That's one basic argument, and it's right. That itself defeats the Mayavadi idea.
So that
illusion. The only way they can get away from that is saying it's neither. You can't say whether it's real or not real. Therefore, you can't object to it. You know, what's the relationship between Ajnana and Brahman? They just run away from the argument by claiming that Ajnana is inexplicable.
But the upadis are actually the products of relationship between ajnana and the Brahman, isn't it?
Yes, and therefore we, you know, that's indefensible. You're right. The theory makes no sense. It's inconsistent. It cannot explain how the perfect Brahman can be changed or affected by Maya. Well, when you say it's Leela, then that's what we say. But that means that the illusionary power is real, but it's controlled by Brahman, and the products of that illusion are real. What's illusory about it is not that we get products that don't exist. Everything exists, but we get things that aren't what they seem to be. We get conditioned souls thinking that they're their material body, and that's the nature of illusion. In the hands of God. Illusory energy is just a servant of God. That's our theory. So you say Leela, yes, it is God's Leela. That's what we say.
So with the same structure of definitions, we can even put our theory we can say even Jivas are Brahman in the sense that they are pure conscious, they are full of Sat, Chit and Anand, whereas Krishna is Parabrahman.
No, but he's a different kind of Brahman than we are.
He's Parabrahman and we are Brahman,
yes.
The souls. So in that sense, Brahman is also covered by Maya. But that Maya is actually an instrument of Parabrahman himself.
Yes.
But that's not covering Parabrahman.
The separated parts of Brahman, the jivas who are separated parts, can be covered by Maya, yes.
And Maya is
but
also
But it has nothing
Brahman.
To do with illusion, with non-reality. The jiva is real, the Maya is real, but the jiva's got some false ideas, that's all. The jiva's thinking wrong. But everything
is real. Your material body is real, but it's not you. You're thinking that it's you is illusion. So but it's not that you're an illusion and your body is an illusion. Neither you or your body exist. You exist, your body does exist, but it's not you.
So really there is avidya and vidya, which are products of maya, and avidya is actually the ignorance of thinking that I'm this body and so on.
And that's
then vidya is the solution to come over. So all the components of the theory exist, but just one small change that we made, that Brahman and Parabrahman, that's all.
Yes, so that's the correct. That is the correct understanding of the Upanishads. You've correctly explained the reality, the real situation. If you want, we can now skip to Anuchet 43, you know, because we've established the right philosophy. But I think that Jiva Goswami wants to, you know, let the Purvapaksha try to defend himself, you know, rather than, you know, give him a trial before you shoot him. So the Mayavadi theory is on trial now, and we're asking him, the lawyers are asking him questions. Well, what about this? Is it this or that? And then show him he's wrong on both sides. Yeah, first prove him guilty and then we'll shoot him. So therefore we're going to read the rest of the Anuchets. Although what you said is right, but first of all, we'll let the Mayavadi try to defend their theory the best they can and show that they can't. To do that, we have to hear them out. We can say, you know, you have just shut up, you have nothing to say, but you know, we're going to let them talk and show that they're wrong. Yes,
Achintya. What do we mean by reflection of qualities? Like configurations are understandable. What do you mean by reflection of qualities?
Oh. Well, shapes are also qualities. Sizes are qualities. And colors are qualities. And other things are qualities. So when I take a red ball and hold it in front of the mirror, I see the shape of the ball. I see the size of the ball. I see that it's round, and I see that it's red. And other things also. These are all qualities. So the thing is reflected, and its qualities are reflected. It would be a strange mirror if I shine a red ball in the mirror, but it shows up with no color in the mirror. You know, maybe I have a black and white TV. And so that's a kind of, you know, reflection where all the qualities don't show. Possible. You can have a funny kind of mirror or a black and white television set.
So what do you mean?
But normally, in a plain regular mirror, you see all the qualities as well as the thing.
So then, what do we mean by configurations that you were given? There?
Shape. I see it's a round ball. I see it's round. That's the configuration of it. It's round shape.
But that's also a quality, isn't it?
Yeah, it's another quality. Yes.
So I mean, because
round, square, triangle, these are qualities.
No, because it is used separately. Qualities and configurations are used separately in the same sentence.
That's maybe confusing, but because configurations also are qualities, yes. Let me look at the sentence. Could you read me the sentence?
A real reflection involves objects.
Real reflection? Let me just look for those words.
Yeah, last paragraph, I think.
A real reflection involves objects and specific qualities. Well, okay, well, having a size is a quality and having a configuration is a quality. You're right. I can rephrase this so it's not confusing like that. Let me just make a note that size and configuration are also qualities. You're right.
In common English usage, the word quality is something like, which is abstract. It's not like it's tangibly.
Well, quality is very general.
Yeah, it's like an abstract usage in general English when they use.
You can have concrete qualities too, but quality is very broad. It includes everything. You know, it includes abstract qualities and all kinds of concrete qualities also. Okay, I'll see if I can make a simple change to that so we don't have that confusing thing. First of all, I have to do this, I have to remember what I meant when I said as qualities. Maybe I just wasn't thinking clearly. Give me a chance to mark this. Okay, anyway, I'm going to have to look at it and see whether I can fix it. I can fix it, but I'll see how to fix it. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry we have so many loose ends here. This is just complicated material, and it takes this kind of hashing around to get it right. Okay, anything else? I'm going to use the board. Yeah?
That one, yeah. So, this lens covered, and if this moves around, so then the Brahman is getting uncovered in different areas. This moves around.
The inner moves around, because not everything's covered.
Yeah, right. This is the covered part of Brahman.
Which is moving around.
It moves around.
In some part, so this part is getting covered, that part is getting uncovered.
That's what they're saying.
I don't know.
That is what he's saying. I don't understand why that is so. Why isn't it same part of Brahman moving around? I don't know. Yeah.
It's the same part of Brahman, the covering.
Yeah, but if you change, then you're not the same part of Brahman anymore. You're a different part of Brahman. You move. You go outside the door, then you're a different part of Brahman.
Because the part of Brahman anyway is illusion.
Yeah. Well, if it's reflection, I can see. You know, you shine a flashlight, and then you move the light over there. It's actually shining on something else. But the division part, what do? You chop up a piece of Brahman and then stuff it back in and chop up another piece? I don't know. No, but you have two different explanations of upadis. They're paticheda or pratibimba. They're pieces or they're reflections. They're two different ways to explain. Third way to explain is that it's just delusion anyway. It's just imagination. There's nothing happening. Yes. All over the world, everybody thinks it's.
Among the
Mayavadis. Which Mayavadis? I mean, the real Mayavadis, not the pseudo Mayavadis, the neo Vedantists who don't even know what Shankara said anyway and don't follow it. The real Shankarites. I don't know. At least up until, the 18th century when they were writing important books, they were still talking about all three. You know, the as far as 20th and 21st century Mayavadis, I don't know. We have to ask them. Where do you get this idea that they're mostly following just a Vivartvad? Okay. People who actually know Mayavad. Well, because the one reason maybe is that the Pratibimbavad and Parichedavad have been knocked down so solidly by the Vaishnavas over the last 1,000 years. You know, if you're in the boxing ring and you've been, punched in the face, every minute for the last hour, you finally have enough. Yeah, you finally give up. Even if you aren't knocked conscious, you just give up. Even if you're not knocked unconscious. So I think the Mayavadis, we've been punching them in the face, the Pratibimbavad and the Parichinavad, for the last 1,000 years, and I think they've given up on those two. But the Vivartavad is more tricky. It's just illusion, so how can you argue against it's just illusion? It's not real. There's nothing there. It's just imagination. So it's a little harder to pin down the Vivartavad. They can keep on arguing it. We've just defeated them too solidly on the other two. And that's probably why they're mostly talking Vivartavad now. Okay, let's stop now. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Jiva Goswami Ki Jai.